This is entitled Facing My Father's Dementia by Tom Bracken, and that would happen to be me. I'm a family doctor in a small town in Minnesota, as a lot of you know. And like everything else I do here, I only talk about things that I've struggled with, not things I'm good at. And I have boards in family practice for a long time, and about 10 years ago I got boards in geriatrics as well. I felt like I knew quite a bit about dementia, and geez, I've got about 30 or 40 nursing home patients at any one time, and I guess about 30% of my practice is geriatrics. But it wasn't until this hit me personally that I really felt like I knew a lot about it, and it wasn't until I got ready for this class that I felt like I could handle it. So I don't. If you all want to do something else, I've got what I need to out of this. Just preparing for it, which has just been really great for me. So if you get something out of it, great. Everything I do at Holden is based on what I've learned here. And I have on my 2001 shirt today, "We Are Called by Name." And I really learned something in 2001. I mean, I learned it. And that was that we are all called by name and God cares for each one of us. And my personal theology and how I treat people has come from that. I kind of believed it before that, but that really got imprinted on my heart that summer when I was here in teaching staff. And the other reason I picked this topic was I thought about what age of people come to these classes. It's not a lot of the 20-year-olds, although we had the sex classes last week. We had some of the younger people. And if you look at the average age, it's about probably 45 to 65, 70. And those people don't have dementia much, but their parents do. So people here still have parents living. So some of you are going through this. And I also like to start with Scripture, but in the Old Testament times, nobody lived that long. So they weren't dealing with dementia. Although we don't know what happened to Joseph, of course. And Jacob, actually, if you read the story of Jacob and Esau, maybe he had a little. He couldn't really figure out who his sons were.
Well, Isaac.
Isaac and Esau. Tell me the name. I'm just mixed up.
Isaac's father.
Jacob and Esau.
Jacob and Esau.
Yeah, Isaac was the one that had dementia. So I'm going to tell you about a late night call, which happened not too long ago. We get up early, so we go to bed about 9:30. My dad knows that. And I had been over at his place talking to him. And we had a nice talk about the twins, and he had some opinions about the catchers, or the pitchers. I wasn't really that up on which pitcher was which and who had what skills. We had a good talk. And we still have a landline, and actually when it rings, we know it's dad because nobody else uses it. He thought that 3M stock was way overpriced at the time, so we had a good talk. So he called. The phone rings at 10:30, and I answer it. I'm sleepy. I've been asleep. "Tom, I've got the TV on channel 11. How do I get to my desktop?" Well, of course, I didn't know what to say. "What do you mean, Dad?" "Just tell me how to get to my desktop." "Well, Dad, are you watching TV?" No, he's yelling, "Just tell me how to get to my desktop." And he was quite upset that I was trying to figure this out. Well, Dad is watching television, and he's watching channel 11, and he wants to get to the desktop view on his computer. So I told him to walk into the bedroom where he keeps his computer, and I talked him through refreshing and viewing the desktop. And I hoped we were done. The reason he was calling was because it was April 14th. What do you have to get done on April
14th? Thank you.
Dad's an accountant, and his taxes are done immaculately. But it was April 14th, and he hadn't started yet, which we had a couple of fights about. So he called me again at 11:30 that he got through the desktop, but it really hadn't done what he wanted. Didn't tell him. He wanted an extension on his taxes, and he didn't tell him what had happened. So here's a rhetorical question. What's going on here? Anybody? What if you went through this with your mom or dad? Pardon me?
It's lost function.
Yeah. No, I like the word function. That's a great word. You were also right, he's forgetful. And actually, those are the 2 points, and there's one after the other. Forgetful is first, and function is second. And later on in this hour, we'll talk about those two things. So, probably dementia. There were things earlier than that, and I'll mention them here in a minute, that we didn't say, yeah, this is Dad's dementia. So it could be other things. It could be stress, depression, drug reactions. Maybe he's drunk. That would do it. No. My dad has a child's portion of brandy before he goes to bed each night. And I've been trying to figure out how much brandy a child should drink, but that's what that's what he calls it. I showed pictures of my mom and dad at the cancer talk, and I just am thinking about this. I'm not going to show them. I think Dad would be upset if he knew I was talking about this here. I'm not going to tell him. Which, after he asked me once, he'll forget to ask me again. So I'm going to tell you about my dad. He was born in Minden, Nebraska. Anybody been to Pioneer Village as you drive across? You should go there. It's halfway across the state of Nebraska. There's nothing else to look at in Nebraska. So when you see the signs for Pioneer Village, stop there. It's an absolutely wonderful museum. He's 82. He grew up during the tough years of the Depression, the Dust Bowl. Went to college, then he went to graduate school out here in Eugene, Oregon, in economics. Worked for 3M all of his career as a cost accountant, and then he became a kind of a vice president before he retired, age 58. My mom died when he was 65. I talked about that last week. And that's when he went from a person that was totally capable to a person that didn't know how to handle things. But that was emotional handling things. He coped well. He took care of himself, got some hobbies, delivered Meals on Wheels. He went to church, counted money in our church for, I think, 30 years, visited us, visited his grandkids. Then when he was in his late 70s, we allowed some funny things. He went to the airport. The flight was at 2, and he got there at 2. He was surprised that they wouldn't take him. He had to wait for the next flight. My sister took him to Paris, and she called the day that he had to drive to the airport. She said, "How you doing? Real good. Yeah. Why, you all packed? Oh, I'll get back later on. Well, it's today, Dad." Which just shocked us. We weren't expecting this at all. He had forgotten it was that day. And that day, and this really killed me. He forgot my birthday. You know, every day when you're a kid, you go downstairs and think, geez, maybe they forgot this year. But they never did. 2 years ago, my dad forgot my birthday for the first time. A year and a half ago, December 22nd, he started a fire in his house by dropping a cigarette into his recliner. And he called me, or somebody else called me and said, "You know, your dad had a fire." And they had that kind of patronizing note in their voice, like, "We're not quite sure where you are with your dad, and we're not sure what you're going to do about this." And there's people I didn't really know. "We've got him over here, he's okay. We've got a motel set up for him." And I thought, "Well, let me talk to Dad." He said, "Yeah, I did a stupid thing. We got a fire at home. Sure, it's from my smoking, but it's really not too bad." Here's the living room where he started the fire. It's not too bad. I'll pass that around in this room. It'll be fun. So he totally charred the downstairs. The upstairs went from white to this color. Every single surface was full of soot. The door was broken. The couch was burning in the front yard. And he told me it wasn't too bad. I live 90 miles away. I probably didn't need to come see him. So I went down, of course. I was on call and picked him up and looked through the house. And again, he said, "Well, this isn't too bad. I think I could sleep here." And you know, everything was just totally, I didn't really understand smoke damage until I saw this. I didn't understand why they gut houses after they have fires like this. But I do know. Took him to the motel, and we were talking about whether he could get a smoking room or not. And I said, "I don't care if I have a smoking room or non-smoking room. It's 1 o'clock in the morning." And he yelled at me about that. "Don't make things difficult for me." Well, of course, I was saying, "I don't care." I just put up with it. When we were in the motel room, they have a new cigarettes have to extinguish after they've been lit a while. And he said, I'm really mad at the governor. I'm going to drive to Wisconsin and get cigarettes that don't go out on their own. I said, Dad, do you see anything ironic in that? Because if we had those kind of cigarettes, you wouldn't have had this fire. They were going to be coming in, but if he had a cigarette that went out, we wouldn't have had this fire. But all he cared about was the smoke. The following day, we had to go in and do all sorts of things. It's a lot of work. And the adjusters came, and all these people were crowded around, and they kind of took one look at him, who he looked the same to me he always looked. And then they started talking to me, which I couldn't figure out, but they just talked to him once, and they understood it. I didn't, because I was his son. And he really didn't have any interest. I don't care what you do. They had me sign the stuff. And this is at a point where I have not personally thought that my dad has dementia, and no one has diagnosed that. His doctor hasn't said it, and we're not facing it yet. So we were surprised each time when something funny happened. I work in Minneapolis a day a month, and I call him up. I'm going to have dinner with you tonight, Dad. Great. And I go there, and he goes, oh, I already ate. Forgot about it. He stopped using email. He stopped reading books. He's addicted to reading. He used to get through about 5 magazines. He couldn't get through Time magazine. We stopped trading answers on the New York Times crossword. How many people here do the New York Times crossword? It's good to prevent dementia. And what happens during the week with the New York Times crossword? Well, first he quit Saturdays. And he still does Mondays sometimes. But he mostly quit doing it. And he would occasionally do a Monday. And he used to be able to beat me on Thursday or Friday. He became insistent on certain aspects of his routine. He had to have Harvest Home cinnamon raisin bread. If he got the other kind, he would just throw it away. His appearance worsened. He would have food on his chin or jacket. And he would be rude to strangers, which is something we were taught never to do. If somebody brought you the wrong thing in a restaurant, you might politely say something, but we're not Norwegian, but we acted. You say thank you. But he would say rude things to strangers. But he carried on overtly normal conversations. He drove around town. He didn't get lost. He knew everybody that visited. He knew about sports. So we had a lot of work to do, but we moved Dad into assisted living. And I didn't, even though I work in an assisted living, and we have one attached to our hospital, didn't really understand it until I got on the inside of it. So my sister and I had to buy everything for him. And by the way, if you're moving your parent, I really advocate burning up their house. You get rid of the stuff you don't want. The stuff that's left, they clean, they put in boxes for you and deliver it to your house. They redo your furniture for you. And the stuff that is just totally ruined, you can buy brand new. And you get money for the rest of it. So it was a lot of work, but that helped. So we were totally exhausted when we finally got it moved in. It took us about a day. And we just before Dad went down to supper, he didn't ask us what we were going to do. He didn't think to, and he would have 5 years ago. He mentioned, oh, by the way, I'm not going to stay here. I'm going to move to an apartment. That was really, it felt terrible. So that point, we had not moved beyond thinking that Dad was getting a little older, slipping a bit, was obnoxious, and was stressed. What's our attitude at this point?
Denial.
Who said that? Where did that come from? Exactly right. We were in denial. And we're used to hearing the word denial from Huber Ross's Stages of Death and Dying, where you hear bad news and such. But I hadn't really put it into place with dementia. You know, and most people, when they're told they have cancer, they get it. There's some emotional denial, but there's not a part of them that very often is totally denying it, thinking that they're fine. But with dementia, families will deny it overtly for quite a while and emotionally for quite a while.
quite a while longer. So the first stage of denial with us was right here. Is that a pretty helpful coping mechanism or not very?
It's not a coping mechanism at all.
I'm getting mostly negative views from you. It helps you a little bit. It keeps you going for a while, and you don't have to deal with things. You can put it off. We had a couple years that we kind of, you know, Dad, you had to think about movement. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, Tom thinks I should move. I'm not going to move. In our case, denial led to a house fire, a car accident, and unpaid taxes. So we were major lucky. So we're in the stage, starting with stages, and we're in the stage to begin with of pre-dementia. And if you test elderly people, some of them are showing signs of memory impairment or cognitive function that's beyond normal. I don't know how you really define a normal for 85, 90, or 100. But there are people that are worse than the rest of them on the bell-shaped curve. And the pre-dementia period is really hard because you know your folks are at home and you're kind of worried about them. They can't handle what they used to handle. You know, if you'd had this fire 20 years ago, I would have felt bad and come down a few days later and talked to him about it, but he would have taken care of it. And then as you move into the worst stages, what you have to look for in yourself is denial. And that's one thing to think about with your parents. Am I in a stage where I'm denying what's going on? At one point, when he was in assisted living, and by then I was dealing with it, but the nurse there said, Tom, I know you're a doctor, and you know you think what you're doing, but you got to start dealing with your dad's dementia. Quit denying it. I was really mad at her. But I consciously turned the other cheek and said, how right is she about that? And even though I accepted the diagnosis, I wasn't accepting the responsibility and everything that I needed to. A real problem with dementia is that it's usually gradual. You don't usually walk into a doctor's office with your loved one or yourself and walk out finding out, oh, my parent has dementia. Sometimes. It's usually a process over a period of time. Now, cancer, you walk in, you think you're fine, you walk out, you're doomed. That's not doomed, but you have a fatal illness. That's a completely different process, and it's so gradual that it's difficult to see. I have a sister that lives in Lewiston, Idaho, and she's home once a year, and she'd come home and tell us, boy, this just burns like bacon. You guys don't know what's going on. Well, geez, you're here once a year, and we're here, you know, every week. But there was a part right to what she was saying. Again, I turned the other cheek and listened to her. So families often find themselves in this period of time where they're dealing with a disorder. It's not diagnosed yet. It still has symptoms that's challenging them. So it's a very difficult and potentially dangerous time. It's dangerous physically because of driving and fires and medication and just the stupid things they do. And it's difficult emotionally because things are happening and families are getting mad at each other. You look at families where siblings are estranged. One of my dearest friends is totally estranged from her brother, who's also a friend. And it has to do with their dad's dementia and his death. So you have something you're dealing with, but you haven't even named it yet. And I have a good book here. It's the right one. Coping with Alzheimer's. And I had more trouble coping later on than I did early, but this is an excellent book. While I'm looking at books, this one is really fascinating. Here's a book written by a guy with Alzheimer's, Richard Taylor. I think he was on whatever the Alzheimer's Foundation board was. And this is from the library here, so I'll be leaving it here. And he had a fairly slowly progressive Alzheimer's, and he had enough cognitive function that he wrote a lot. And they talk about how he manages to cope with his changes. Well, so what should we do? With any problem, you should figure out what it is, and then you should deal with it. So let's look at the stages of dementia a little bit here, and some definitions. You could do this for quite a long time, but we won't do that. So the DSM-4 is the list of medical diagnoses that have to do with psychiatric and mental illness, and kind of the Bible for that. So dementia is evidence from the history and mental status examination that indicates major impairment in learning and memory. That's the first thing. Major impairment in learning and memory. And if you look at Dad, boy, he can learn. He can learn about the Minnesota Twins. He knows the 3M stock is. And at least one of the following. Impairment in handling complex tasks. Impairment in reasoning ability. Impaired spatial ability and orientation. In other words, getting lost. And impaired language. I think I see the impaired language. Oh, boy. Oh, we're okay without that. Are they working on something, Carolyn? It's the second time. I've seen the language problem the least. They usually can talk fairly well. And so the four were... Is it still okay?
No.
We get something I really have to do. Like we have the flip chart here. So impairment in learning and memory and complex task difficulty, reasoning ability, spatial ability, and language. Well, what do we think of Alzheimer's, the lay terms, what do you usually hear if they're having a problem with?
Memory.
Memory. And memory is a problem, but they usually cope with it. Somebody was telling me about their dad having a Palm Pilot, and he wrote stuff in his Palm Pilot. They have lists, they have calendars. And in the early stages, you often miss that. So going on here, so we'll kind of try to remember that. Major impairment in learning and memory, and especially difficulty in handling complex tasks. And what was the word you used, function? They use the word executive function, your ability to get something done. And Dad would buy a coffee maker. It wouldn't work right. I think every tech support guy in India knows him. He would call them and talk to them for hours. The return guys at Best Buy, they all know him because this just doesn't work for me. And he'd go back and he'd get another one. And it'd take him 2 days to buy a coffee maker, and it'd just be something, well, Dad, you just have to push this little button, and just, things just became so hard for him.
Can I ask a question, Don?
You, anytime.
You talk about dementia and Alzheimer's. I understood there's two different...
I'm gonna answer that in detail in a minute.
Okay.
So, good question. The cognitive symptoms must significantly interfere with work performance, social activities, or relationships with other people. You know, and when this guy started writing, I would guess that maybe he wasn't fulfilling these criteria entirely. The next one, this must represent a significant decline from a previous level of functioning. Well, that can get you in trouble, too. My dad talks about the stain of dementia because it's on his diagnosis sheets. And it really bugs him that it's there. He's seen the sheets when they have care conferences or the nurses talk about it. They sent in somebody as part of his orientation to his first assisted living. They sent in somebody to assess his memory. And, you know, did you know your mother's maiden name? Do you know what the date is? Subtract 7 from 100. There's a bunch of stuff. He scored 100%. That really irritated me. She told him, "You're fine, Ben." And he trumpeted that to us time and time again. "My memory is just fine. I did 100%. I said, "Well, how did you do, Dad?" "Well, she asked me what the date was, and I said it was 1900 and whatever." Well, it was 2010 when he took the test. His memory isn't so good. But, you know, the guy was smart. He's got a master's degree, went to college, and he's done Saturday New York Times crossword puzzle. So it depends where you start. These disturbances are of insidious onset and are progressive.
You can get changes in cognition that are sudden from a stroke. And I have a patient that I take care of in the nursing home that he has some specific things he gets mixed up about, especially where he is, and some paranoia, and it's all from a stroke right here in his brain, and he didn't have any dementia before, and it hasn't. Now, the other thing is it hasn't gotten worse. It's the same. So he really doesn't have dementia. He has organic brain syndrome from a stroke. There are specialists called neuropsychologists that can do this neuropsychometric testing, and sometimes they'll tell me, you know, yeah, this person doesn't function very well, but it's probably from a stroke rather than Alzheimer's disease. And the disturbances are not better accounted for by something else. I mean, they're alcoholic or they're depressed or whatever. And when you take geriatric scores, you have to figure out the differences between depression and dementia. I've been fooled a few times. There's some stages. I've told you about how we've worked on the pre-dementia stage, which really wasn't that bad for us. There's some subtle changes in memory, changes in activity. Dad kind of quit reading, started canceling subscriptions. He came to stuff. He'd come to the girls' activities at school, and he'd be there late. And he'd only stay. He'd drive 90 miles, stay for an hour, and go home. And apathy. They don't carry on the conversation with you like you wish they did. And then you go into stage one. Some memory loss. They mostly compensate for it. And these people look pretty good. There's probably some people here with it. I don't know if there's anybody on staff with it. And then before you know it, you're in stage two. And they have, well, the first people are home, maybe assisted living for, maybe they have other reasons, you know, for the husbands, their wife is gone and she did all the cooking, or if my dad had died first, my mom doesn't drive. Stage two, you get into moderate, they have more overt difficulty with tasks, need some help, and a lot of these people are assisted living, sometimes they have medical problems in the nursing home. And then stage three, almost all institutionalized. Severe memory difficulty. Start to lose some language. Institutionalized. Now, although memory loss is usually the first, it's not always what's first noticed, and we talked about compensating for it. And we talked about executive function. And families usually start getting concerned when their loved ones have difficulty with simple tasks of living. Getting dressed, hygiene, house cleaning, cooking, and what's the big one?
Driving.
Driving. Oh, is anybody here taking their car keys away from their dad? Well, that's tough. We got lucky in that one, too. He had an accident. And the state took him away.
Man in our church, his kids took their car keys away from him and hit him. And when he was asked for them, they just told him.
Oh, they hid them.
They
HID.
Hid them.
I thought you said he hit them.
No.
Which would not be uncommon.
The kids hid them.
Yeah.
And when he asked for them, they said they didn't know. You must have did something with them.
Yeah.
Well, the neighbor called one of the kids one day, and they says, I think your dad is not going to be have car keys anymore. He's got a locksmith out there.
Oh, really?
Making keys.
And you know, you're doing something you've never, well, maybe never done with your dad. You're dishonest. We lie to him all the time. I lie to him about what I'm talking about out here. I'm a Christian. I don't lie, you know. Chuck asked about the causes of dementia, and we'll address that a little bit. Alzheimer's disease, which is 70% of cases. Now, dementia is all these reasons for not thinking clearly. Most of them are Alzheimer's. When grandma's 90,
years old, and she slowly fades and dies over a couple of years. That's Alzheimer's. When someone's 40 and has cognitive function, a lot of times that is not Alzheimer's. That is something else. We've had some cases in our practice of that recently. And Alzheimer's, if you do an autopsy, which hardly ever did done, there's characteristic changes in the brain. No one really knows what causes them. No one really knows how they do what they do. And no one really knows what we can do to prevent them. There's little hints of things. But what causes depression in our brains? Anybody know?
Serotonin.
You see, that was a trick question I sent you all about. We know that drugs that change serotonin levels in our brain change depression, but we don't know how brains work. Because you know, the mechanics have a huge advantage over physicians. They can turn it off, take it out, look at it, put it back in, and except on Star Trek, that hasn't worked for us. So all this talk about chemicals, yes, these chemicals change, but we really don't know how these medicines work. The chemical that works with cognition is probably acetylcholine, and drugs that promote that, like Aricept and Namenda, help a little bit. They don't help a lot. And drugs that block those, which are some of the drugs like Detrol that you take for your bladder, can make a normal older person look like they have dementia. You take away the drug, they're okay. So the next most common is actually Parkinson's. And not everybody that gets Parkinson's gets dementia. The people with Parkinson's that get dementia don't respond very well to any kind of treatment for it. The Parkinson's medicine itself doesn't help the dementia. It's often a late stage. When I was younger, they always said grandma had hardening of the arteries. Well, there's some of them do, and that's strokes. We have something called multi-infarct dementia. If you have enough little strokes that kind of knock off little pieces of your brain at a time, you get dementia. I have a neighbor who used to be my partner that I... it's a soccer guy.
Wow.
I don't know if anyone's more interested in beefcake than dementia. Right there. So multi-infarct dementia, and their change in function goes like this. Not like this. It really doesn't make a huge difference in treatment. I mean, you should treat the things that cause strokes, high blood pressure, and all that kind of thing, and blood thinners. And the interesting thing is we now have these MRIs. When I just started in med school when they were first doing CTs of the brain, which were kind of cool because you could see the stroke, you could see the bleeding. And now they have MRIs and we can see so much clearer. And when you look in the white matter, the gray matter is on the outside, the white matter is inside, you see all these little holes in people my age and older. And sometimes the radiologist comments on them. And my partner, who wasn't aware of this, started working this person up for all, I don't know why you're having all these little strokes, but they were fine. It's just, you have changes in your brain you're not aware of. There's this weird thing called dementia with Lewy bodies. Lewy was, I believe, a pathologist. And it's a dementia where they tend to have visual hallucinations. They tend to have Parkinson's features. So they've had dementia for a little while, and then they start trembling and bent over like a Parkinson's patient and walking funny. That could be dementia with Lewy bodies. And the great thing about it is it doesn't help you good. And I'm not real familiar with this. One of my partners is a patient with this frontotemporal dementia. They're younger than 65, and they have some, tends to affect the front of the brain and the parietal lobe and temporal lobe where you have your speech, and they tend to have more behavior problems. Someone starts acting up that used to be normal.
They become very childlike.
Have you seen that?
Become very childlike. Regress.
That answer your question, Chuck?
Yeah, okay. So 70% of the dementia is Alzheimer's.
Yeah. And a lot of patients say, I don't have dementia, but I have Alzheimer's.
Well, okay. I've heard they give tests, and somehow, when these tests, they can tell what they've got.
No, I'm going to talk, I have a, you're always anticipating. Did you sneak in and look at this stuff, Chuck?
No.
Two slides later, I've got something about how we check for it. Okay. So what's a, you, all of us are thinking, boy, I bet this is hitting me. So what's normal memory problems? Well, forgetting names from long ago is not dementia. Well, I got this aside. The most fun thing in Holden this time around has been seeing people I knew before. I just had to hug Sue yesterday. We were at work camp a year and a half. It is just, Barbara Budd, I hadn't seen her since 2006. It is just so fun to see people. It's not that fun to see people I know at home. I was sick of them. So, but I often can't remember the names. Will Childs, I hadn't seen him in 4 years, was right there. Having difficulty finding a word, and you do that. Taking longer to learn, and you know, you think you're sharp, but if you went to college with your kids and you both took the same trigonometry class, it would take you longer to learn, although you might have some better studying skills than you. And your reflexes are slower. Here's some abnormal memory problems. Really missing appointments occasionally, but start having that problem. Leaving the water run or the stove on is not what we worry about. Not paying bills or balancing your checkbook. My dad takes his bills and he had five places for them. Kitchen table, ottoman, floor, desk, and another bin. And he would go to the mail three times a day because he didn't want to miss the mail. But he would either not open them or open them and leave them. And we had a terrible session where I had to go through that stuff while he screamed at me. Forgetting family birthdays. Making unusual plans and decisions. It's not a bad, we did this. We called the broker and said, by the way, Dad gets some great idea to invest in Holden Village or something. Call me first, I have power of attorney. Not able to learn new directions and dropping out of things and Dad quit going to church. Which was pretty bad, you know, it was really rotten. Church quit going to him. Mm-hmm. I can't figure this out. One of the guys that bid on his house once it got fixed up was the new pastor. Not a visit in a year and a half, and he was involved in that church from the day they built it. Well, you and I talked about it with Paul's parents. Any thoughts about that? Anybody worried they have it yet, or are you pretty good?
And just out of curiosity, now how many people here, I wonder, use the alphabet to think about names?
We all have tricks.
I do.
I mean, if I know somebody say, like, Joe, then I will Joe A, Joe B, and try to think, does that connect? Mm-hmm. Usually it works. I mean,
it's embarrassing, and I guess my way to do it is, I forgot your name. Works
well,
good
yeah.
for me. I know who you are, I know that you've got this, and I know you did this, and I think your wife's pretty, which is what I think about you.
But talking to her about somebody else, you know.
Yeah.
I think we'll both do it. Who gets there first?
So you, Chuck, you mentioned something about how we figure this out. Well, and I was worried with Dad that he's had a couple other medical problems. Maybe I'm missing something. There's something called normal pressure hydrocephalus. Hydrocephalus means you have water in the brain, and that can happen with the pressure still normal. If some of us older people remember, I'm older people now, remember Arthur Fiedler from the Boston Pops, he had it. They put a shunt in your brain and sometimes it gets better. So I was worried that maybe Dad had something wrong. He was also walking funny. He used to walk normally, he was walking slower and his foot kind of turned out. Maybe I'm missing something. So I decided to get him evaluated. And I had a family doctor visit with my partner. I brought him up to my home. You gotta have some lab work. Just a regular blood count. Check the thyroid. Rarely we'll see people with B12 levels that are low, folate. We had a CT or the MRI of their brain. Now, you know, of Grandma's 92 and she's really feeble. Is that necessary? Probably not. Somebody that's been functional and they've changed, probably is. MRI, somewhat a better test, but I have to tell you, I've never found, on all the ones I've done, I've never found somebody that had something I could fix. But at least puts your mind at ease.
Excuse me, I hate to interrupt, Tom, but...
I like when you interrupt.
B12, I understand, is the absorption of B12 diminishes as you age.
It does to a certain degree. Actually, people are used to having B12 shots. If you give people a pretty hefty dose of it, most people can absorb it. So it's not a bad thing to take, or to take a multivitamin that has B12 in it. The other thing everybody's excited about now is vitamin D. All Minnesotans are vitamin D deficient because we sit inside all winter. I've been checking everybody lately, and the people from Arizona all have decent levels, and the people that were in Minnesota are all low. Sometimes if they're in a living facility, have a doctor or their nurse practitioner check them out. And this place that I put Dad in initially had a visiting family doctor that, or an internist that had geriatrics boards, and that was very helpful because he had quit going to the doctor. He didn't do any good. Tell you who helps me the most is our occupational therapist. And I thought occupational therapists were people that helped you with your job, but they help you with things you do, especially activities of daily life like eating, bathing, dressing. And our occupational therapists do it's a several hour assessment, and they tell me whether my patient has, they'll tell me what kind of dementia, but whether they have cognitive impairment and what level they're at and whether they should be supervised. I just really rely on them. Another thing they do is they help with driving. I think it's a different day I'm talking about driving. Help me understand whether or not that patient really is safe driving. I mentioned earlier using a neuropsychologist for neuropsychometric testing and a neurologist. And in Dad's case, I had all this stuff done. The neurologist is an old friend of mine, and she saw Dad and said, yeah, your father has cognitive impairment. The thing that she also told me is that, you know, he started from pretty high up, so it's hard to see. That's why you've had trouble with it. And doing all this together, and we did all this in 3 days with Dad as a comprehensive geriatric assessment. And so we got that done, and I had the answer to my question. I could tell my two sisters that's what we're dealing with. Dad didn't really care. He liked my family doctor friend because he shaved the callus on his foot. He didn't like the occupational therapist because she forgot the appointment. That's a good one. He couldn't really remember seeing the neurologist, and he didn't see why she cost more, of course. But for me, it was really helpful. Any questions about anything there? Comments? Anybody put their loved one through something like this? Yeah? Family doctor doesn't have to be in family medicine like I am. Question, Carmen?
Well, I just wanted to tell you that you are saying that everything that we went through with my father-in-law, who was 90, who had Parkinson's since he was 50.
Oh, that's a long time.
And I think the biggest problem was not dealing with his dementia, but dealing with my other siblings who refused to admit that he had dementia.
Oh boy, that's a problem. Mm-hmm.
But what was really funny is that on his 85th birthday, his Arizona driver's license expired, and he insisted on going to get a renewal. So I took him thinking that, oh, he's going to fail, I'm not going to worry about that. He got it.
Ten years.
They gave him a driver.
Oh,
I thought
gosh.
It was the worst thing ever.
Oh man.
But they didn't want, you know, I couldn't really interfere and tell the officer of my father-in-law has dementia, he has Parkinson's. He didn't want me to say that, so
yeah.
He didn't. So he got his driver's license, so it was a big problem for us.
Dad took the test 5 times and he took a course first. The guy says, oh yeah, you're gonna be fine. And they flunked him every time, and I never found out what it was, but I suspect they took a look at him and made their mind up before he got in the car and were just gracious to him. And he asked the last guy, why aren't I passing? He says, I don't know, man. It just seems that you do pretty good, but you're just not going to quite pass it. I'm sure the guy knew. Just like that fat guy in Malacca, where my kids take their test, he flunks everybody the first time. I hate that guy.
So what do you do now?
Uh-oh isn't good, especially when you hear a doctor say one.
Yeah, right.
Uh-oh. I'm missing a... Oh, no, I'm good. It's just different type. And this actually helped my siblings and I get closer together. When my sister was here last time, she said, yeah, you did a good job, except you don't know how to use that overhead projector. It's beginner's method. So I made a bigger type this time. So how do you deal with it? And I'm going to talk more about that tomorrow. You get them evaluated, went through that pretty extensive. Get family involved. Now, this maybe I'm talking a little more from a practitioner, caregiver standpoint. When I have somebody who has dementia, I have to figure out how I'm going to be in touch with family. And I don't know if everybody knows about HIPAA laws. Health Import Private Policy Act, something like that. And basically that you have to respect people's privacy. Well, they're getting to the point where they're no longer can't respect their privacy and still care for them. So I have all the tricks that you can use. I try to find out their family's numbers, cell phone numbers, addresses, emails, so that if something gets crazy, I have other people to deal with. I do that if they have medical problems as well. But it's like dealing with an addiction. You often have to break through that denial pretty hard, and they may nod their head and they walk out the door and they're still torn. Be ready for denial, theirs and yours. Identify, and this is back to the being a child of someone with dementia. Identify others to help you. You know, I live 90 miles from Dad, and he's in the community I grew up in, and there were people there that could, you know, buy him something where he ran out of it, or look in after him in case I had a problem. My in-laws lived close to him, and they helped out a few times. And here's the tough one. You got to be ready to take over. That wasn't easy. I had to have Marion yell at me about that before I took over and made the move I had to make. They don't communicate so well anymore. So you have to be an active listener. And what are they really saying? Sometimes they're saying, I'm lonely, I'm scared, I'm hungry, I'm bored, I can't cope with this. And they don't know how to put that into words. And it's partly age, it's also generational or a cohort. I think the people, baby boomers, do better handling our feelings. We were taught to do that more than our parents were. And this is hard to do. And I have to remind myself, continue to love them. My dad's in assisted living now, and the people there love him. I can't believe it. He's sarcastic. He's got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and they just love him to pieces. So you have to, even when they're working you to death and not giving you a lot of love back, you have to continue to love them. And again, I'll talk a lot more about that in the next couple of days. Any thoughts on these issues here?
I would just want to add to that, and especially when you're talking about the HIPAA laws, is that if your family members or you don't have a durable power of attorney for health care issues,
yeah,
that signed and designates first choice, second choice, third choice, so you have those phone numbers and that permission signed by that person, that's huge.
I think that's in tomorrow's talk.
Oh, sorry.
Because you know, that's good. Now they want to come back even more. That's very important, and we did that. Actually, that's one thing Dad did right. He gave me durable power of attorney, and there's, a big long list of what you can and can't involve, and he let me do all of it. And a couple of times he specifically mentioned regretting that, because he was angry at me about something I was doing, and there's things I just have to do that he won't do, and they just have to get done. And we've worried a little bit about whether I've had these mental movies about him suing me and you know, what would it be like. And I wrote a whole thing, I write all the stuff that I'm thinking about, and I wrote a whole thing on my computer just documenting his dementia in case somebody questioned, well, you're just taking advantage of your dad. And we see people take advantage of these people.
it's usually nephews and nieces or neighbors, but we've seen them just drain their accounts and sell their antiques. And you can say, Paul?
Well, I just gonna, if it'll help anybody. My dad lived to be 101.
And a half.
And Tom was his doctor. Though Tom has nothing to do with what I'm going to mention. I think I refuse to admit that this very smart, in-control guy was not in control of his checkbook. And he chose by himself not to drive. He chose by himself to go to assisted living, somewhat. So I thought he was really on top of things. Well, to make a long story short, before I stepped in, he had lost $10,000 to somebody just picking it away, and I fault myself for that. I just wouldn't admit that this guy can't do this. And I also, I remember saying to Jeannie, that's my wife right there in the hospital chaplain, and she warned me even. I said, no, I can't take that away from him. Because she'd say, well, then you do it. I said, no, Dad, you can do this. And I should have taken it. And so if that helps anybody, I'm reinforcing what you say. We don't want to do it, but I should have.
Well, Paul, to tell them how wonderful your dad is, when they caught the person doing them, tell them what your dad wanted them to do.
She thought, or he thought that, yeah, it's too bad that we got to hire her. They fired her. He wanted to hire her back because she was so nice.
I felt that in my father-in-law's stage, he was really a victim of people who came to sell things at his house.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't leave him. If I went to take my kids to violin lesson, I came back. He had about $3,000 of hospital bed that he doesn't really need.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that was the biggest thing, was to wrestle with him. We needed to help him make those financial decisions. But yeah, he lost out. He would go on, you know, somebody would call and said, you need a water system for your house. He would buy a water system for the house.
Yeah, they're very vulnerable.
Yeah, very vulnerable. So that's where I felt it was the most, where he was taken advantage of, was by salespeople that came to the house.
There's my last mini subject here is, should they be told? Now, we made this diagnosis in my dad, and should we tell him? At the time that he had the evaluation, I think we might have said, yeah, they found that you have some memory impairment, Dad. Of course, he was in assisted living at this point. We really didn't have to take him anywhere else. We didn't have to take away him. Well, at that point, we were looking at taking away his car, but it was just a month later that the state took it away after he was in a serious accident, but nobody got terribly hurt. So, I guess, what do you guys think? Should you tell someone that Alzheimer's disease, you have Alzheimer's disease? Now, this gentleman knew about it for years. I don't know if he's still writing, but he wrote about Alzheimer's disease for 2 years. Any thoughts?
Well, I can't answer the pure question, but I can comment that my father is about to turn 80 and has had a number of small strokes and has vascular dementia from that. And after one stroke, when he was more impaired, it's interesting how much somebody can actually regain.
Yep.
He really has regained a lot at various points. And but he would say, well, you know, I'm getting Alzheimer's and stuff like that. And I'd be on the phone with both my parents, and my mother would go, no, you don't have Alzheimer's, you have vascular dementia, multi-infarct dementia, you know, and that's what it is. And it's not a taboo subject in our family. It's reassuring to him for some reason that it's not Alzheimer's. He is having a good disease process as much as anyone can, because he's very happy with how things are going. And he'll tell me, he'll say, I need so much help. You wouldn't believe it. Without your mother, you know. He's very appreciative of what she does and stuff. But he'll also tell me, you know, I think I've made pretty near a full recovery. You know, so he's, in a sense, sort of a happy drunk, you know.
How many illnesses do you have that you're unaware of?
Yeah.
And Dad doesn't really, he told us 3-4 months ago, my
sister said, well, what do you think things are going to be like for you 3-4 years from now? Oh, I'll be fine. I don't really think I've slipped yet. And I'm sure I'll be fine 3-4 years. And then he's dramatically different from 2 years ago. And you just can't believe it, that people can be unaware of how much they've changed. Don't they look in the mirror? Don't they compare what they're doing now with what they did before? And the answer is no, they don't.
I'm a big advocate of being really honest with people. And I think the question that you're raising is whether the person will really accept it or not.
Well, that's a big part of it. He hasn't accepted it. He talks about this stain. My experience as a physician is they usually don't accept it, or they forget the conversation. I can't think of somebody right offhand. Well, I have a mentor who is getting dementia. He's 85. He practiced till he was 82. Wonderful, wonderful man. Anybody that knew Herb Brokering, he was Herb's friend and doctor. Mm. And he knows and is dealing with it, but it becomes a moot question often.
It's personality dependent, I think. It's very much. Might be useful, but it's not worth arguing and shaking the person and saying, don't you realize you have dementia? No, I don't. And yes, you do. This is why. It's just not worth it. There's no value in it.
You don't speak as the scribes from experience.
Okay. One last question for me, anyway. What finding does in a person that has Alzheimer's? What's he finally die from?
Jeannie and I were just talking about that. It in of itself is not fatal if you continue to feed someone, and I'm not a fan of artificial feeding with patients with Alzheimer's, because you can. Gosh, we had a lady that had Alzheimer's for 10 years, hadn't done anything. In 10 years, she was 98, and her family put in a feeding tube, and she lived another 5 in a bed. I think someone would come and sing to her, but what sense did that make? So, not eating is one, or choking while you're eating. Sometimes they just slip away. There, I was telling Jeannie about this lady in our church that prayed for me every day. I like that. And we and another guy in the neighborhood helped her through these various stages, home to assisted living to nursing home, and she didn't have any family. And she just slipped away. She just kind of quit doing stuff more and more and had less and less to say. And they're usually elderly, so they die from all the things elderly people. And it's, you can make a mistake, well, they had a heart attack. Well, okay, let's go unplug that artery. Well, let's not. We're on a decline, and it's going to go like this, or it could go like this. And that's okay, because that time in between is not terribly valuable, and we don't have to use artificial means to extend it.
Well, if you're going to talk about it tomorrow, then don't have to answer this question. But I bet I've read 10 times now in different places that physical fitness is more important for mental stability than mental fitness is. In other words, running or whatever is better than the crossword puzzle.
True. You would say that.
You're a runner.
Well, I've read that a lot, and I've read it recently.
I actually have not seen that, but show me, send it to me.
Okay.
I thought it was chocolate.
That's the case. I'm going to live forever.
My aerobics instructor said something like that, but it wasn't just physical fitness. It's getting your brain to figure out how to do one thing with your hands, like in dancing, and a different thing with your feet, and then change your movements. It's not just the like running. For me, it's easy, and I try to do this aerobics class, and I feel like absolute idiot. Can't do different things with my hands and feet at the same time, but I'm getting a little better.
That might be. I think 2 and 2 makes 4, and I'm getting 5. Yeah.
Anyone else?
Well, I would think that physical exercise, I would think that mental exercise, I would think that diet, all these things that help makes your body function better.
What I read, I got more on the engagement, actually. Engagement with other people and remaining active in society was more helpful than any one thing. And know, better than sitting home and doing crossword puzzles is to have an active social life and things to look forward to and do and such.
This is a subject for another day, and it's opening Pandora's box, but somehow or other we have to start dealing with the economics of all of this. How much can our country sustain all the services, all the tests, and everything that go on?
I think that in this country, doing this amount of testing is worthwhile. Now, keeping people alive that don't need to be alive, that's a very individual thing, which is what you'd rather have than what they do in countries where you don't have those choices, or where you're just poor and you don't have a choice, which is what majority of the world has.
But is it really an individual thing, or does the whole society and the future of our country have to be involved in it?
I certainly heard a lot of talk about that with the health reform bill and the implication there's going to be these death squads and things, and I don't pretend to understand that. Okay, well, you've been a great group. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about dealing with the more advanced stages where you really get emotionally taken to your limits, because I've been there. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.